This is Radioactive Magazine, a KKFI public affairs program of progressive activism, opinion, and commentary. Opinions expressed on this program are those of the speakers alone and are not necessarily the views of KKFI, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, show hosts, or other guests on the program.
Hello, this is Dave Mitchell with Global Warming Corner. Today we have an extended edition of SAME, brought to you by 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Today we will have a conversation on the basic development and consequences of global warming, along with recent international efforts to address our climate crisis. In our studio today, we have Mr. Craig Wolf, a longtime environmental activist in Kansas, and Mr. Winston Apple, a very passionate citizen on the issue of global warming. Gentlemen, good evening to you both.
Good evening.
Hello.
And Mr. Craig Wolf has been a past chair of the Kansas Sierra Club, which is a Sierra Club over in Johnson County, as well as the Kansas chair of the Kansas Sierra Club. He is the current communications director, webmaster, and newsletter editor of the Kansas chapter of the Sierra Club, and the current president of the Heartland Renewable Energy Society. Mr. Winston Apple is a retired high school teacher, providing instruction in the areas of economics and government. He was recently a Democratic candidate for the Missouri House of Representatives, and now devotes his time to political activism and our climate crisis. He is the author of a book, Edutopia, a manifesto for reform of public education, and he is an occasional political blogger on BC Magazine. Prior to discussing recent international efforts to reduce carbon emissions, I feel it necessary to mention some fundamentals related to warming of the climate. The seeds of our warming climate begin with the coming of the Industrial Revolution in the mid-1700s. When humanity began to burn ever-increasing amounts of fossil fuels, coal, oil, and natural gas. Our living Earth has not been able to process all of the waste products of our fossil fuel burning, in other words, greenhouse gases, leading to much more of those gases in our atmosphere than in pre-industrial times. NASA's website on global warming, climate.nasa.gov, indicates CO2 is at 399.30 parts per million, which is more than it has been in the last 650,000 years. Since 1880, the global average temperature has risen 1.4 degrees Fahrenheit, and 97% of climate scientists agree warming of our climate is very likely due to human activities. The disturbing news is, according to the United Nations International Panel on Climate Change, their 2014 draft synthesis report, at current emission rates, the global average temperature will exceed 2 degrees centigrade above the pre-industrial average in 20 to 30 years. 2 degrees centigrade is 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit. Most greenhouse gases since the Industrial Revolution have been released since 1970. All of the world's efforts to reduce emissions have failed. It is obvious the buildup of greenhouse gases in our atmosphere is expanding rapidly. Lonnie Thompson, the internationally recognized climatologist from Ohio State, has famously stated, he and his colleagues believe global warming is a clear and present danger to civilization. Gentlemen, the floor is now open for discussion. Craig, would you like to... would you like to say some words in relation to...
You know, as an activist, the thing that I am trying to figure out how to do is to get people to wake up. There is so much that needs to be done, and there's so little being done. And the primary reason for that is because there are not enough people making enough noise. It's not like the bombs being dropped in Pearl Harbor in 1941. Or was that 44?
41.
Okay. That really woke us up. because it's kind of a slow bake that we're going through, literally. Mm-hmm. And so that is what I'm struggling to figure out, is how to find the path, how to find the roadmap to get activists, and particularly young people. That's the biggest challenge. I mean, when in 1968, when we were trying to stay out of the Vietnam War, and I was a candidate to go over there, a lot of people got really angry and were railing against the war. But we don't have that type of energy right now to rail against this phenomenon.
Yeah, there is. I think denial processes are really quite significant in relation to global warming, and I think it's getting harder and harder to deny what's going on, because weather events are beginning to be pretty obvious these days. And Winston, do you have any thing you'd like to say?
Well, I could probably find a thing or two to say. Kind of following up on what Craig said, he mentioned Pearl Harbor. I think that the polls show that the majority of Americans now believe that climate change is happening and that humans are contributing. It's not a huge majority, but I think it's in the 60% range. But I don't know how many people are aware of just how serious this threat is. I really got my attention drawn to it, and I've been buying cars with an eye on miles per gallon since 1974. But my attention to this crisis got sharpened, and the focus got sharpened back in March when I read a review of Elizabeth Colbert's new book, The Sixth Extinction, that said that the ultimate consequence of global warming will be the extinction of the human race if we don't change course. Mm-hmm. And I read an article in the Kansas City Star recently talking about climate scientists saying it's very nice that President Obama and the Chinese have come to this agreement, but it's really not going to do that much. And they're very excited that there may be an international agreement of some sort next year. And again, they say it's not near enough, that we're almost certainly going to go past 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit. There's really no doubt about that. The only question is, where do we land between 4 degrees and 10 degrees increase? And if we're close to 10, the human race is gone. And this is 200 or 300 years away, but the line from here to there looks a lot more and more like a Mad Max movie.
Yeah.
And I don't know that that's the future that we want for our grandchildren or great-grandchildren. Yeah. The people that we're saving may be as yet unborn, but, you know, Craig, the World War II analogy, I think, is great, because a lot of people give Franklin Roosevelt credit for ending the Great Depression. He did not. He was never totally bought into Keynesian economics. He tried to balance the budget in 1938, and unemployment spiked back up. It was the ramp up in production for World War II that ended the Great Depression. Full employment. The Chinese symbol for crisis is a mix of two symbols, danger and opportunity.
Yeah.
And there's an opportunity here to do away with unemployment, to stop arguing about minimum wage and give everybody meaningful, socially useful employment. We can't address this problem too quickly.
Uh-huh. Well, I think that's the fundamental issue, is that there are significant elements in our society that do not perceive that there is a danger.
I think the vast majority of people are unaware that the danger is that serious.
And some of the people that see that there are possible problems don't perceive it as serious.
If I didn't subscribe to the Kansas City Star, I might not know it was that serious.
But you know, well, that's a whole other conversation, is media being asleep at the wheel.
I don't know that they're asleep at the wheel. I think that they're complicit in this. I think that we're talking about corporate-owned media, mm-hmm. and we're talking about some giant multinational corporations who are making a lot of money off coal and oil, and mm-hmm. there is approximately $10 trillion worth of coal and oil left in the ground, and they intend to dig it up and sell it.
Yeah. Well, I think... Yeah, I'm not so sure I would object to the word complicit. You know, I think, it's either active or passive, and I think a lot of it might be passive, but I really do think that there are a lot of denial processes going on collectively, and I think that that definitely plays into this whole mix.
You know, I think a lot of people are just going about their business, living very busy lives, taking kids to soccer games and shopping and going to movies and out to dinner and paying the bills and working more hours than people ever used to work before, those that are lucky enough to have a job.
Yeah.
You know, Naomi Klein makes the point in her new book, This Changes Everything, that the easiest thing to do is just to go on what we're doing. Just ignore the problem. It's not right in our faces just yet. But if we wait until it's in our faces, it's going to be too
late. Oh, yeah. The phenomena of global temperature and everything that entails is like a giant flywheel. If you know what a flywheel is something that maintains inertia over a long period of time. And by the time, if we wake up 40 years from now and say, okay, everybody, grab a shovel and let's solve this climate change issue, it's going to be too late, because the stuff that's causing climate change is going to be in the atmosphere for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. Yeah. And we'll just be toast.
Well, there's a significant lag in the climate system between pumping in a certain amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere and the effect of doing that. The NASA on their website, they do talk about the average temperature of the globe having increased 1.4 degrees Fahrenheit since 1880, and we could talk a little bit about what's happened with our climate with only 1.4 degrees Fahrenheit warming. You know, the UN IPCC, the United Nations International Panel on Climate Change, is talking about the world blowing past 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit warming in the next over pre-industrial temperatures in another 20 or 30 years. So we're talking about a relatively rapid increase of temperatures in the next 30 years as opposed to the last 100. And so we really are coming onto a crisis here. But let's talk a little bit about what we get with a 1.4 degree Fahrenheit warming world so far. One thing I know we could mention would be that the Arctic ice cap is NASA's website again indicates that the Arctic ice cap is losing 13.3% ice coverage every decade, and that's measured at the summer minimum in September.
Well, how many societies and groups of people on the planet right now depend upon ice and snow melting? So when that ice and snow is no longer there on the mountains to melt, you've got whole civilizations that don't have any water anymore. So the whole thing is a huge game changer. Mm-hmm. We've got a great carbon sink, and it's called our oceans. One of the byproducts of the oceans absorbing carbon is that they're becoming more acidic. And when the oceans become more acidic, then the little itty-bitty creatures can't survive. And then when the little itty-bitty creatures can't survive, then the bitty creatures can't survive. And then the larger fish can't survive. And so it's a collapse of an ecosystem.
Collapse of the entire food chain.
Of the entire food chain in the ocean. So now you have a dead ocean. Mm-hmm. And it's going to take more than a few decades. It'll take eons for that ocean to return to a state where it can support life again. The little blue ball, if you ever looked at Carl Sagan's pictures of the Earth up against the enormity of the universe, but we're flying this wonderful miracle that was able to create life. We're flying this thing just like we're flying an airplane. And we're screwing up our ability to survive on this little airplane. My God, what a tragedy for all the people out there who are religious. This is the worst thing that we could be doing for the stewardship of the planet. We have got to make the security of our ability to live on the planet a spiritual venture that we all pull behind and move toward.
Well, that does get into a subject I was wanting to get to towards the end, and that is that humanity does need to understand that we are completely interdependent and part and parcel of a living planet, and that we come from a living planet, and we are acting as though we can grow forever. We are acting as though we can do whatever we want to the environment without consequence. And collectively, this is what we're doing. And there needs to be a collective vision which allows humanity to begin to act responsibly, to grow up. And but let's get back to some of the specific things. The third U.S. National Climate Assessment lists a number of things which happen because of global warming, and they're not unique. I mean, these kinds of things are happening with increasing frequency and intensity all over the world. Heat waves and droughts, extreme precipitation events and flooding, wildfires, insect outbreaks, widespread tree die-off, decreased water supplies, decreased agricultural yields, sea level rise and ocean acidification, which we've mentioned already. There are tons of examples. There are plenty of examples, if you pay just barest a bit of attention around the world, of things that are happening. And I think this is where I think one thing that that you definitely start to get very concerned about is overall agricultural production as our world continues to heat up.
Dave, you mentioned sea level rise, and this is from Naomi Klein's book, Credit Where It's Due. She mentions that in June 2014, there was a thing called the Risky Business Project, led by Michael Bloomberg, former mayor of New York, Henry Paulson, former Secretary of the Treasury, and Tom Steyer, who's a retired investor and very active on the climate. They warned that climate change would cost the U.S. economy billions of dollars each year as a result of rising sea levels alone, excluding any of the other damage, and encourage the corporate world to take those climate costs seriously. And more, I think you'll see a rift among corporations, with them distancing themselves a little bit from the fossil fuel industry, because they are beginning to realize that these costs are going to impact them. The insurance business alone. Imagine if these extreme weather events become more common and more severe, what that's going to do to the insurance industry.
Yeah, that's the canary in the coal mine, at least for some of the areas we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And when you can't get insurance on the coastlines anymore, then people, that investment is down the tubes.
You know, I was struck recently by the near panic about Ebola in the mass media, and, of course, the shocking beheadings, which obviously are horrible, horrific events. But look at the relatively small number of people involved in those incidents compared to in 2003, there was a heat wave in Europe that killed nearly 15,000 people in France alone.
I remember that heat wave. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that being covered. Yeah.
And, of course, everyone says, oh, well, the weather's always fluctuated and come and gone. But, you know, the first scientific breakthroughs demonstrating that burning carbon could be warming the planet were made in the late 1950s. And the first serious warnings about the consequences are over a quarter of a century ago now. This isn't new information, but it is. The analogy I've heard is it's the frog in the water, that's the temperature's going up and up and up, and the frog doesn't realize the danger until it boils to death.
Yeah.
And, you know, yes, we've always had extreme weather events, but not like Superstorm Sandy, not like the drought that hit California, not like this heat wave in Europe. not as frequent and not as severe. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, the drought in California was, my understanding from reading, is that it was the worst drought in 1,200 years. Mm-hmm. And they have had some rains there the last couple weeks. But my understanding, again, from reading Climate Progress, is that it's going to take them a long, long time to of good rain to recharge their loss of water that they've had. So.
And 1,200 years ago, I was just a teenager, but I do remember that drought.
You do? Okay.
It's been a long time since we had one that bad.
You've lived a long time. I think, you know, the reality is that you know, with warming the climate, you get more frequent and more intense extreme weather events, heat waves, droughts, floods, wildfires. Pine beetle infestation in out west is terrible. Russia in 2010 had a heat wave the likes of which they hadn't seen in hundreds of years, and they lost 25% of their wheat crop. They had to terminate their wheat exports. And as a result of that, there was a sharply rising price of bread in Egypt. And one of the untold stories behind all that was that was a big factor in the development of the Arab Spring in that country at that time. So, that's just one example of how global warming can be an accelerator of conflict.
Sure. Oh, my God. And,
so once we have food shortages and water shortages, you're going to see conflict.
You're going to see Mad Max living itself out because you will have people who will wall themselves off like the feudal days to protect themselves. And then you will have gangs of marauders who will be like pirates that will take from whoever is not strong enough to protect themselves. It will be the collapse of civilization as we know it. It'll be something you wouldn't wish on your enemies to experience.
And the good news is, from Naomi Klein and the Chinese symbol for crisis, that this is a huge opportunity for us to remake our society and the world as a kinder, gentler, better place.
But somebody's got to take a hold of the steering wheel and steer us in the right direction. And this is not happening now.
I've become more and more active this year politically, and I've always been sort of at home reading and writing and talking to a few people about things, but I've really gotten out there this year. I'm a new but very active activist. And I'm amazed at how, I was at, Dan, I know Dave was at the People's Climate March in New York City, too, and my wife Mary and I were there, to be in the middle of 400,000 people. And it was a celebration. This wasn't a protest march. It was a celebration. Everyone was happy. Everyone was singing. Everyone was having a great time interacting with each other. It was just a joyous experience. And, you know, I like to think that here in the United States, we have the unique opportunity to change our government, to change the world, to change everything through ballots instead of bullets, through simply changing our own lifestyles.
I really do believe it's a combination of once you become aware of these things, you're almost morally obligated to change your lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And change of personal lifestyle is fundamental. I also think that society changing their decisions is fundamental as well. The world is trying to make a difference. The United Nations the United Nations just completed their most recent climate summit, and they came out with the Lima Accord just a week or so ago, and the U.S.-China deal with the Obama administration and China talks about the U.S. reducing their emissions 28% by 2025, and the Chinese peaking their emissions by 2030 with 20% renewable energy development by then, which is huge, huge. And the European Union just agreed to reduce their emissions 40% by 2030, using 1990 as a metric. That's huge, but scientists are saying that you put all those things together and it's still not enough. Right. You know, so we're trying. I mean, you know, there's all sorts of good stuff happening all over the planet. I mean, good stuff's happening now as we speak. Mm-hmm. And Iowa gets 25% of its electricity from wind. Mm-hmm. You know, Germany generated 50% of its electricity one day this summer from I think primarily solar.
But think about the type of society we had in the 1940s, the first half of that decade, where everyone was focused on the war and everyone was working to win that war. We're going to have to create the same type of environment now, sure, where everyone is working to stop what we're doing.
And we're definitely not there yet. It will require that kind of effort. It affects all of us, and each one of us has a part to play. We have just not too long left here. Winston, let's start with you. And what would you like to say in conclusion?
Well, I'd just like to encourage everyone who's listening, and I'm assuming there are very few climate change deniers listening, just to realize that there's a lot that we can all do. And I won't go through the litany of all the things you can personally do, but I would like to mention that the City Council in Independence passed a resolution in July, and they're moving actively to explore solar and to expand solar, including the possibility of a solar community project. Sugar Creek, I just found out a couple weeks ago, has the possibility of a 10 to 17 megawatt solar array. And some of this may be available for people to buy into. This community solar, you can actually buy into the panels and all. There's just all these things going on. If you look around, they're happening. Okay. Get involved.
Yeah, there's all sorts of good stuff happening.
Get involved.
Craig, would you like to say a few words?
What it's going to take, it's going to take many approaches to stop this monster. It's going to take governmental, political will. It's going to take people changing their lifestyles. It's going to take a retooling of what we now think of as capitalism. So find what you can do and learn how to do it to the best of your ability. Join the Sierra Club, join other organizations, etc.
There is a website that Mark has put up at www.kcsolarmap.org. That's www.kcsolarmap.org, where you can put in your address and you can see what it would cost to put solar panels on your roof, how much you'd save, and typically you'll see a 7-8% return on investment.
Okay. You know, for anyone that wants to learn some real basic information about global warming, the NASA website at climate.nasa.gov has a lot of good basic information that would get you started. I think also you could Google United Nations International Panel on Climate Change. Just Google UNIPCC and ask for their 2014 draft synthesis report. I think you would learn a great deal of information from that.
And listen to KKFI and all the fine programs here, like
there you go.
Okay.
Dave, thank you for having
us
tonight.
All right. Well, you guys, thank you very much for being on the show. I wish we had a lot more time to discuss some other issues. You know, I think how much time do we have left? We're good. We're done.
We're done.
Okay.
All right. We're toast.
You have been listening to Radioactive Magazine on KKFI, which is on every Tuesday evening at 6 o'clock, and this was a Global Warming Corner installment on Radioactive Magazine. Coming up the next weeks ahead, on December 30th, we have SPARC, which is Senior Peers Actively Renewing Knowledge. And the guest on that will be Jan Parks on January 6th, Janet Rogers with a Transit Action Network show, part of a continuing series. And on January 13th, the Martin Luther King Forum, American Friends Service Committee with Sharon Lockhart. Radioactive Magazine is a presentation of KKFI. It is meant as a vehicle for Kansas City area activist groups to get some airtime for their issues. So if your activist group would like to participate in Radioactive Magazine, call Dan Connolly at area code 816-217-5875. Thank you for listening.